I asked. Why does Hybern want to do this beyond some horrible desire for conquest? What drives him? His people? Hatred? Arrogance? Lucian finally looked at me, the intricate pieces and carvings on the metal eye much more dazzling up close. Do you... Branna and Dagdon shoved through the bushes, frowning to find us sitting there. But it was Jurian, right on their heels, as if he'd been divulging the details of his surveying, who smiled at the sight of us, knee to knee, and nearly nose to nose.
"Careful, Lucian," the warrior sneered. "You see what happens to males who touch the High Lord's belongings."
Lucian snarled, but I shot him a warning glare. "Point proven," I said silently. And despite Jurian, despite the sneering royals, a corner of Lucian's mouth tugged upward. Ianthe was waiting at the stables when we returned. She'd made her grand arrival at the end of breakfast hours before, breezing into the dining room when the sun was shining in shafts of pure gold through the windows. I had no doubt she'd been planning the timing, just as she had planned the stop in the middle of one of those sunbeams, angled so her hair glowed and the jewel atop her head burned with blue fire. I would have titled the painting Model Piety. After she'd been briefly introduced by Tamlin, she'd mostly cooed over Jurian, who had only scowled at her like some insect buzzing in his ear. Dagdon and Branna had listened to her fawning with enough boredom that I was starting to wonder if the two of them perhaps preferred no one's company but each other's, in whatever unholy capacity. Not a blink of interest toward the beauty who often made males and females stop to gape. Perhaps any sort of physical passion had long ago been drained away, alongside their souls. So the Hybern royals and Jurian had tolerated Ianthe for about a minute before they'd found their food more interesting. A slight that no doubt explained why she had decided to meet us here, awaiting our return as we rode in. It was my first time on a horse in months, and I was stiff enough that I could barely move as the party dismounted. I gave Lucian a subtle, pleading look, and he barely hid his smirk as he sauntered over to me. Our dispersing party watched as he braced my waist in his broad hands and easily hefted me off the horse, none more closely than Ianthe. I only patted Lucian on the shoulder in thanks. Ever the courtier, he bowed back. It was hard sometimes to remember to hate him, to remember the game I was already playing. Ianthe trilled. "A successful journey, I hope." I jerked my chin toward the royals. They seemed pleased. Indeed, whatever they'd been looking for, they'd found agreeable. I hadn't dared ask too many prying questions. Not yet. Ianthe bowed her head. "Thank the cauldron for that."
"What do you want?"
Lucian said, a shade too flatly. She frowned but lifted her chin, folding her hands before her as she said,
"We're to have a party in honor of our guests, and to coincide with the summer solstice in a few days. I wish to speak to Farah about it."
A two-faced smile.
"Unless you have an objection to that?"
"He doesn't," I answered before Lucian could say something he'd regret. "Give me an hour to eat and change, and I'll meet you in the study." Perhaps a tinge more assertive than I'd once been, but she nodded all the same. I linked my elbow with Lucian's and steered him away. "See you soon," I told her, and felt her gaze on us as we walked from the dim stables and into the bright midday light. His body was taut, near trembling. "What happened between you?" I hissed when we were lost among the hedges and gravel paths of the garden.
"It's not worth repeating."
"When I was taken," I ventured, almost stumbling on the word, almost saying left. "Did she and Tamlin..." I wasn't faking the twisting low in my gut.
"No," he said hoarsely. "No. When Callan Mai came along, he refused. He flat-out refused to participate. I replaced him in the rite, but... I'd forgotten. Forgotten about Callan Mai and the rite. I did a mental tally of the days. No wonder I'd forgotten. I'd been in that cabin in the mountains, with Reese buried in me. Perhaps we'd generated our own magic that night. But Lucian... You took Ianthe into that cave on Callan Mai? He wouldn't meet my gaze. She insisted. Tamlin was...
Things were bad, Feyre.
I went in his stead, and I did my duty to the court. I went of my own free will, and we completed the rite.
No wonder she'd backed off him. She'd gotten what she wanted.
Please, don't tell Elaine, he said. When we find her again, he amended.
He might have completed the great rite with Ianthe of his own free will, but he certainly hadn't enjoyed it. Some line had been blurred. Badly. And my heart shifted a bit in my chest as I said to him, with no guile whatsoever, I won't tell anyone unless you say so. The weight of that jeweled knife and belt seemed to grow.
I wish I had been there to stop it. I should have been there to stop it. I meant every word. Lucian squeezed our linked arms as we rounded a hedge, the house rising up before us.
You are a better friend to me, Feyre, he said quietly, than I ever was to you.
Alice frowned at the two dresses hanging from the armoire door, her long brown fingers smoothing over the chiffon and silk.
I don't know if the waist can be taken out,
she said, without peering back at where I sat on the edge of the bed.
We took so much of it in that there's not much fabric left to play with. You might very well need to order new ones.
She faced me then, running an eye over my robed body.
I knew what she saw, what lies and poisoned smiles couldn't hide. I had become wraith-thin while living here after Amarantha, yet for all Reese had done to harm me, I'd gained back the weight I'd lost, put on muscle, and discarded the sickly pallor in favor of sun-kissed skin. For a woman who had been tortured and tormented for months, I looked remarkably well. Our eyes held across the room, the silence hewn only by the humming of the few remaining servants in the hallway, busy with preparations for the solstice tomorrow morning. I'd spent the past 2 days playing the pretty pet, allowed into meetings with the Highburn royals mostly because I remained quiet. They were as cautious as we were, hedging Tamlin and Lucian's questions about the movement of their armies, their foreign allies, and other allies within Prithian. The meetings went nowhere, as all they wanted to know was information about our own forces. And about the Night Court. I fed Dagdon and Branna details both true and false, mixing them together seamlessly. I laid out the Illyrian host amongst the mountains and steppes, but selected the strongest clan as their weakest. I mentioned the efficiency of those blue stones from Highburn against Cassian's and Azrael's power, but failed to mention how easily they'd worked around them. Any questions I couldn't evade? I feigned memory loss, or trauma too great to bear recalling. But for all my lying and maneuvering, the royals were too guarded to reveal much of their own information. And for all my careful expressions, Alice seemed the only one who noted the tiny tells that even I couldn't control.
"Do you think there are any gowns that will fit for solstice?" I said casually as her silence continued.
"The pink and green ones fit, but I've worn them thrice already."
"You never cared for such things,"
Alice said, clicking her tongue. "Am I not allowed to change my mind?" Those dark eyes narrowed slightly. But Alice yanked open the armoire doors, the dresses swaying with it, and rifled through its dark interior.
"You could wear this."
She held up an outfit. A set of turquoise night court clothes, cut so similarly to Amryn's preferred fashion, dangled from her spindly fingers. My heart lurched.
That, why...
Words stumbled out of me, bulky and slippery, and I silenced myself with a sharp yank on my inner leash. I straightened. I have never known you to be cruel, Alice. A snort. She chucked the clothes back into the armoire.
Tamlin shredded the other two sets. Missed this one because it was in the wrong drawer.
I wove a mental thread into the hallway to ensure no one was listening. He was upset. I wish he'd destroyed that pair, too.
I was there that day, you know,
Alice said, folding her spindly arms across her chest.
I saw the Morrigan arrive. Saw her reach into that cocoon of power and pick you up like a child. I begged her to take you out.
My swallow wasn't feigned.
I never told him that. Never told any of them. I let them think you'd been abducted. But you clung to her, and she was willing to slaughter all of us for what had happened.
I don't know why you'd assume that. I tugged the edges of my silk robe tighter around me.
Servants talk. And under the mountain, I never heard of or saw Rhysand laying a hand on a servant. Guards, Amarantha's cronies, the people he was ordered to kill, yes, but never the meek. Never those unable to defend themselves.
He's a monster.
They say you came back different. Came back wrong.
A crow's laugh.
I never bothered to tell them I think you came back right. Came back right at last.
A precipice yawned open before me. Lines. There were lines here, and my survival and that of Prithian depended upon navigating them. I rose from my bed, hands shaking slightly.
But then Alice said, My cousin works in the palace at Adriata.
Summer Court. Alice had originally been from the Summer Court, and had fled here with her two nephews after her sister had been brutally murdered during Amarantha's reign.
Servants in that palace are not meant to be seen or heard, but they see and hear plenty when no one believes they're present.
She was my friend. She had helped me at great risk under the mountain, had stood by me in the months after, but if she jeopardized everything...
She said you visited, and that you were healthy and laughing and happy.
It was a lie. He made me act that way. The wobble in my voice didn't take much to summon. A knowing, crooked smile.
If you say so.
I do say so. Alice pulled out a dress of creamy white.
You never got to wear this one. I had it ordered for after your wedding day.
It wasn't exactly bride-like, but rather pure, clean. The kind of gown I'd have resented when I returned from under the mountain, desperate to avoid any comparison to my ruined soul, but now... I held Alice's stare, and wondered which of my plans she'd deciphered. Alice whispered,
I will only say this once. Whatever you plan to do, I beg you, leave my boys out of it. Take whatever retribution you desire, but please spare them.
I would never, I almost began. But I only shook my head, nodding my brows, utterly confused and distressed. All I want is to settle back into life here. To heal. Heal the land of the corruption and darkness spreading across it. Alice seemed to understand it, too. She set the dress on the armoire door, airing out the loose, shining skirts.
Wear this on solstice, she said quietly.
So I did. Chapter 4 Summer solstice was exactly as I had remembered. Streamers and ribbons and garlands of flowers everywhere.
casks of ale and wine hauled out to the foothills surrounding the estate. High fae and lesser fairies alike flocking to the celebrations. But what had not existed here a year ago was Ianthe. The celebrating would be sacrilege, she intoned, if we did not give thanks first. So we all were up 2 hours before the dawn, bleary-eyed, and none of us too keen to endure her ceremony as the sun crested the horizon on the longest day of the year. I wondered if Tarquin had to weather such tedious rituals in his shining palace by the sea. Wondered what sort of celebrations would occur in Adriata today, with the High Lord of Summer who had come so very close to being a friend. As far as I knew, despite the murmurings between servants, Tarquin still had never sent word to Tamlin about the visit Rhys, Amarin, and I had made. What did the Summer Lord now think of my changed circumstances? I had little doubt Tarquin had heard, and I prayed he stayed out of it until my work here was finished. Alice had found me a luxurious white velvet cloak for the brisk ride into the hills, and Tamlin had lifted me onto a moon-pale mare with wild flowers woven into her silver mane. If I had wanted to paint a picture of serene purity, it would have been the image I cast that morning, my hair braided above my head, a crown of white hawthorn blossoms upon it. I dabbed rouge onto my cheeks and lips, a slight hint of color, like the first blush of spring across a winter landscape. As our procession arrived at the hill, a gathered crowd of hundreds already atop it, all eyes turned to me. But I kept my gaze ahead, to where Ianthe stood, before a rudimentary stone altar bedecked in flowers and the first fruits and grains of summer. The hood was off her pale blue robe for once, the silver circlet now resting directly atop her golden head. I smiled at her, my mare obediently pausing at the northern arc of the half-circle that the crowd had formed around the hill's edge and Ianthe's altar, and wondered if Ianthe could spy the wolf grinning beneath. Tamlin helped me off the horse, the gray light of pre-dawn shimmering along the golden threads in his green jacket. I forced myself to meet his eyes as he set me on the soft grass, aware of every other stare upon us. The memory gleamed in his gaze, and the way his gaze dipped to my mouth. A year ago, he had kissed me on this day. A year ago, I danced amongst these people, carefree and joyous for the first time in my life, and had believed it was the happiest I'd ever been and ever would be. I gave him a little shy smile and took the arm he extended. Together we crossed the grass toward Ianthe's stone altar, the Highburn Royals, Jurian, and Lucian trailing behind. I wondered if Tamlin was also remembering another day, all those months ago, when I'd worn a different white gown, when there had also been flowers strewn about, when my mate had rescued me after I'd decided not to go through with the wedding, some fundamental part of me knowing it wasn't right. I believed I didn't deserve it, hadn't wanted to burden Tamlin for an eternity with someone as broken as I'd been at the time. And Rhys... Rhys would have let me marry him, believing me to be happy, wanting me to be happy, even if it killed him. But the moment I had said no, he saved me, helped me save myself. I glanced sidelong at Tamlin, but he was studying my hand, braced on his arm, the empty finger where the ring had once perched. What did he make of it? Where did he think that ring had gone if Lucian had hidden the evidence? For a heartbeat, I pitied him. Pitied that not only Lucian had lied to him, but Alice as well. How many others had seen the truth of my suffering, and tried to spare him from it? Seen my suffering and done nothing to help me? Tamlin and I paused before the altar, Ianthe offering us a serene, regal nod. The Highburn Royals shifted on their feet, not bothering to hide their impatience. Branna had made barely veiled complaints about the solstice at dinner last night,
declaring that in Highburn they didn't bother with such odious things, and got on with the revelry, and implying, in her way, that soon neither would we. I ignored the royals as Ianthe lifted her hands and called to the crowd behind us, "A blessed solstice to us all!" Then began an endless string of prayers and rituals, her prettiest young acolytes assisting with the pouring of sacred wine, with the blessing of the harvest goods on the altar, with beseeching the sun to rise. A lovely rehearsed little number. Lucian was half asleep behind me. But I'd gone over the ceremony with Ianthe and knew what was coming when she lifted the sacred wine and intoned,
"As the light is strongest today, let it drive out unwanted darkness. Let it banish the black stain of evil."
Jab after jab at my mate, my home. But I nodded along with her.
"Would Princess Branna and Prince Dagdon do us the honor of imbibing this blessed wine?"
The crowd shifted. The Highburn royals blinked, frowning to each other. But I stepped aside, smiling prettily at them and gesturing to the altar. They opened their mouths, no doubt to refuse, but Ianthe would not be denied.
"Drink! And let our new allies become new friends," she declared. "Drink and wash away the endless night of the year."
The two De Mahdi were likely testing that cup for poison through whatever magic and training they possessed. But I kept the bland smile on my face as they finally approached the altar and Branna accepted the outstretched silver cup.
They each barely had a sip before they made to step back. But Ianthe cooed at them, insisting they come behind the altar to witness our ceremony at her side. I had made sure she knew precisely how disgusted they were with her rituals, how they would do their best to stomp out her usefulness as a leader of her people once they arrived. She now seemed inclined to convert them. More prayers and rituals, until Tamlin was summoned to the other side of the altar to light a candle for the souls extinguished in the past year, to now bring them back into the light's embrace when the sun rose. Pink began to stain the clouds behind them. Jurian was also called forward to recite one final prayer I'd requested Ianthe add, in honor of the warriors who fought for our safety each day. And then Lucian and I were standing alone in the circle of grass, the altar and horizon before us, the crowd at our backs and sides. From the rigidity of his posture, the dart of his gaze over the sight, I knew he was now running through the prayers and how I had worked with Ianthe on the ceremony, how he and I remained on this side of the line right as the sun was about to break over the world and the others had been maneuvered away. Ianthe stepped toward the hill's edge, her golden hair tumbling freely down her back as she lifted her arms to the sky. The location was intentional, as was the positioning of her arms. She'd made the same gesture on winter solstice, standing in the precise spot where the sun would rise between her upraised arms, filling them with light. Her acolytes had discreetly marked the place in the grass with a carved stone. Slowly, the golden disk of the sun broke over the hazy greens and blues of the horizon. Light filled the world, clear and strong, spearing right for us. Ianthe's back arched, her body a mere vessel for the solstice's light to fill, and what I could see of her face was already limned in pious ecstasy. The sun rose, a held gilded note echoing through the land. The crowd began to murmur, then cry out. Not at Ianthe, but at me. At me, resplendent and pure in white, beginning to glow with the light of day as the sun's path flowed directly over me instead. No one had bothered to confirm or even notice that Ianthe's marker stone had moved 5 feet to the right. Too busy with my parading arrival to spy a phantom wind slide it through the grass. It took Ianthe longer than anyone else to look. to turn to see that the sun's power was not filling her, blessing her. I released the damper on the power that I had unleashed in Highburn, my body turning incandescent as light shone through. Pure as day, pure as starlight.
Cursebreaker,
someone murmured.
Blessed,
others whispered. I made a show of looking surprised, surprised and yet accepting of the cauldron's choice. Tamlin's face was taut with shock. The Highburn royals, nothing short of baffled. But I turned to Lucian, my light radiating so brightly that it bounced off his metal eye, a friend beseeching another for help. I reached a hand toward him. Beyond us, I could feel Ianthes scrambling to regain control, to find some way to spin it. Perhaps Lucian could too, for he took my hand, and then knelt upon one knee in the grass, pressing my fingers to his brow. Like stalks of wheat in a wind, the others fell to their knees as well. For in all of her preening ceremonies and rituals, never had Ianthe revealed any sign of power or blessing.
But Feyre Cursebreaker, who had led Prithian from tyranny and darkness?
Blessed, holy, undimming before evil. I let my glow spread until it too rippled from Lucian's bowed form, a knight before his queen. When I looked to Ianthe and smiled again, I let a little bit of the wolf show. The festivities, at least, remained the same. Once the uproar and awe had ebbed, once my own glow had vanished when the sun crested higher than my head, we made our way to the nearby hills and fields, where those who had not attended the ceremony had already heard about my small miracle. I kept close to Lucian, who was inclined to indulge me, as everyone seemed to be torn between joy and awe, question and concern. Ianthe spent the next 6 hours trying to explain what had happened. The cauldron had blessed her chosen friend, she told whoever would listen. The sun had altered its very path to show how glad it was for my return. Only her acolytes really paid attention, and half of them appeared only mildly interested. Tamlin, however, seemed the wariest, as if the blessing had somehow upset me, as if he remembered that same light in Highburn, and couldn't figure out why it disturbed him so. But duty had him fielding thanks and good wishes from his subjects, warriors and the lesser lords, leaving me free to wander. I was stopped every now and then by fervent, adoring fairies who wished to touch my hand, to weep a bit over me. Once I would have cringed and winced. Now I received their thanks and prayers beatifically, thanking them, smiling at them. Some of it was genuine. I had no quarrel with the people of these lands, who had suffered alongside the rest, none. But the courtiers and sentries who sought me out. I put on a better show for them. Cauldron blessed, they called me. An honor, I merely replied. On and on I repeated those words, through breakfast and lunch, until I returned to the house to freshen up and take a moment for myself. In the privacy of my room, I set my crown of flowers on the dressing table and smiled slightly at the eye tattooed into my right palm.
The longest day of the year,
I said into the bond, sending along flickers of all that had occurred atop that hill.
I wish I could spend it with you.
He would have enjoyed my performance, would have laughed himself hoarse afterward at the expression on Ianthe's face. I finished washing up and was about to head out into the hills again when Rhysand's voice filled my mind.
"It'd be an honor," he said, laughter in every word, "to spend even a moment in the company of Feyre, cauldron blessed."
I chuckled. The words were distant, strained. Keep it quick. I had to keep it quick or risk exposure, and more than anything I needed to ask to know,
"Is everyone all right?" I waited, counting the minutes.
Yes, as well as we can be. When do you come home to me?
Each word was quieter than the last. Soon, I promised him. Highburn is here. I'll be done soon. He didn't reply, and I waited another few minutes before I again donned my flower crown and strode down the stairs. As I emerged into the bedecked garden, though, Risan's faint voice filled my head once more.
I wish I could spend today with you, too.
The words wrapped a fist around my heart, and I forced them from my mind as I returned to the party in the hills, my steps heavier than they'd been when I floated into the house. But lunch had been cleared away, and the dancing had begun. I saw him waiting on the outskirts of one of the circles, observing every move I took. I glanced between the grass and the crowd, and the cluster of musicians coaxing such lively music from drums and fiddles and pipes as I approached, no more than a shy, hesitant doe. Once, those same sounds had shaken me awake, had made me dance and dance. I suppose they were now little more than weapons in my arsenal, as I stopped before Tamlin, lowered my lashes, and asked softly, "Will you dance with me?" Relief, happiness, and a slight edge of concern.
"Yes," he breathed. "Yes, of course."
So I let him lead me into the swift dance, spinning and tilting me, people gathering to cheer and clap, dance after dance after dance, until sweat was running down my back as I worked to keep up, keep that smile on my face, to remember to laugh when my hands were within strangling distance of his throat. The music eventually shifted into something slower, and Tamlin eased us into the melody. When others had found their own partners more interesting to watch, he murmured,
"This morning, are you all right?"
My head snapped up. "Yes, I don't know what that was, but yes. Is Ianthe mad?"
"I don't know." She didn't see it coming. "I don't think she handles surprises very well."
"I should apologize." His eyes flashed.
"What for?" "Perhaps it was a blessing. Magic still surprises me. If she's angry, it's her problem."
I made a show of considering, then nodded, pressed closer, loathing every place where our bodies touched. I didn't know how Rhys had endured it, endured Amarantha, for 5 decades.
"You look beautiful today," Tamlin said.
"Thank you." I made myself peer up into his face. Lucian told me that you didn't complete the rite at Kalan Mai, that you refused.
And you let Ianthe take him into the cave instead."
His throat bobbed.
"I couldn't stomach it."
"And yet you could stomach making a deal with Highburn, as if I were a stolen item to be returned." "Maybe this morning was not just a blessing for me," I offered. A stroke of his hand down my back was his only reply. That was all we said for the next 3 dances, until hunger dragged me toward the tables where dinner had now been laid out. I let him fill a plate for me, let him serve me himself as we found a spot under a twisted old oak and watched the dancing and the music. I nearly asked if it was worth it, if giving up this sort of peace was worth it in order to have me back. For Highburn would come here, use these lands, and there would be no more singing and dancing, not once they arrived. But I kept quiet as the sunlight faded and night finally fell. The stars winked into existence, dim and small above the blazing fires. I watched them through the long hours of celebrating, and could have sworn that they kept me company, my silent and stalwart friends. Chapter 5. I crawled back to the manor 2 hours after midnight, too exhausted to last until dawn. Especially when I noted the way Tamlin looked at me, remembering that dawn last year
when he'd led me away and kissed me as the sun rose. I asked Lucian to escort me, and he'd been more than happy to do so, given that his own status as a mated male made him uninterested in any sort of female company these days. And given that Ianthe had been trying to corner him all day to ask about what had happened at the ceremony. I changed into my nightgown, a small lacy thing I'd once worn for Tamlin's enjoyment, and now was glad to don thanks to the day's sweat still clinging to my skin, and flopped into bed. For nearly half an hour, I kicked at the sheets, tossing and turning, thrashing. The adder, the weaver, my sisters being thrown into the cauldron, all of them twined and eddied around me. I let them. Most of the others were still celebrating when I yelped, a sharp, short cry that had me bouncing from the bed. My heart thundered along my veins, my bones, as I cracked open the door, sweating and haggard, and padded across the hall. Lucian answered on the second knock. "I heard you. What's wrong?" He scanned me, russet eye wide as he noted my disheveled hair, my sweaty nightgown. I swallowed, a silent question on my face, and he nodded, retreating into the room to let me inside. Bare from the waist up, he'd managed to haul on a pair of pants before opening the door, and hastily buttoned them as I strode past. His room had been bedecked in autumn court colors, the only tribute to his home he'd ever let show, and I surveyed the night-dark space, the rumpled bedsheets. He perched on the rolled arm of a large chair before the blackened fire, watching me wring my hands in the center of the crimson carpet. "I dreamt about it," I rasped. "Under the mountain. And when I wake up, I can't remember where I am." I lifted my now unmarred left arm before me. "I can't remember when I am." Truth, and half a lie. I still dreamed of those horrible days, but no longer did they consume me. No longer did I run to the bathroom in the middle of the night to hurl my guts up. "What did you dream of tonight?" he asked quietly. I dragged my eyes to his, haunted and bleak. "She had me spiked to the wall, like Claire Bedder. And the adder was..." I shuddered, running my hands over my face. Lucian rose, stalking to me. The ripple of fear and pain at my own words masked my scent enough. Masked my own power as my dark snares picked up a slight vibration in the house. Lucian paused half a foot from me. He didn't so much as object as I threw my arms around his neck, burying my face against his warm, bare chest. It was seawater from Tarquin's own gift that slipped from my eyes, down my face, and onto his golden skin. Lucian loosed a heavy sigh and slid an arm around my waist, the other threading through my hair to cradle my head. "I'm sorry," he murmured. "I'm sorry." He held me, stroking soothing lines down my back, and I calmed my weeping, those saltwater tears drying up like wet sand in the sun. I lifted my head from his sculpted chest at last, my fingers digging into the hard muscles of his shoulders, as I peered into his concerned face. I took deep, heaving breaths, my brows knotting and mouth parting as I...
"What's going on?"
Lucian whipped his head toward the door. Tamlin stood there, face a mask of cold calm. The beginnings of claws glinted at his knuckles. We pushed away, too swiftly to be casual. "I had a nightmare," I explained, straightening my nightgown. I didn't want to wake the house." Tamlin was just staring at Lucian, whose mouth had tightened into a thin line as he marked those claws, still half-drawn. "I had a nightmare," I repeated a bit sharply, gripping Tamlin's arm and leading him from the room before Lucian could so much as open his mouth. I closed the door, but could still feel Tamlin's attention fixed on the male behind it. He didn't sheathe his claws. didn't summon them any further, either. I strode the few feet to my room, watching Tamlin assess the hall, the distance between my door and Lucian's.
"Good night," I said,
and shut the door in Tamlin's face. I waited the 5 minutes it took Tamlin to decide not to kill Lucian, and then smiled. I wondered if Lucian had pieced it together, that I had known Tamlin would come to my room tonight, after I had given him so many shy touches and glances today, that I had changed into my most indecent nightgown, not for the heat, but so that when my invisible snares in the house informed me that Tamlin had finally worked up the nerve to come to my bedroom, I'd look the part. A feigned nightmare. The evidence set into place with my thrashed sheets. I'd left Lucian's door open, with him too distracted and unsuspecting of why I'd really be there to bother to shut it, or notice the shield of hard air I'd placed around the room so that he wouldn't hear or scent Tamlin as he arrived. Until Tamlin saw us there, limbs entwined, my nightgown askew, staring at each other so intently, so full of emotion, that we'd either just been starting or finishing up. That we didn't even notice until Tamlin was right there, and that invisible shield vanished before he could sense it. A nightmare, I'd told Tamlin. I was the nightmare. Preying on what Tamlin had feared from my very first days here. I'd not forgotten that long ago fight he'd picked with Lucian. The warning he'd given him to stop flirting with me, to stay away. The fear that I'd preferred the red-haired lord over him, and that it would threaten every plan he had. "Back off," he'd told Lucian. I had no doubt Tamlin was now running through every look and conversation since then. Every time Lucian had intervened on my behalf, both under the mountain and afterward, weighing how much that new mating bond with Elaine held sway over his friend. Considering how this very morning Lucian had knelt before me, swearing fealty to a newborn god as if we had both been cauldron-blessed. I let myself smile for a moment longer, then dressed. There was more work to do. Chapter 6 A set of keys to the estate gates had gone missing. But after last night's incident, Tamlin didn't appear to care. Breakfast was silent, the Highburn royals sullen at being kept waiting so long to see the second cleft in the wall, and Jurian, for once, too tired to do anything but shovel meat and eggs into his hateful mouth. Tamlin and Lucian, it seemed, had spoken before the meal, but the latter made a point to keep a healthy distance from me, to not look at or speak to me, as if still needing to convince Tamlin of our innocence. I debated asking Jurian outright if he'd stolen the keys from whatever guard had lost them, but the silence was a welcome reprieve. Until Ianthe breezed in, carefully avoiding acknowledging me, as if I was indeed the blinding sun that had been stolen from her. "I am sorry to interrupt your meal, but there is a matter to discuss, High Lord," Ianthe said, pale robes swirling at her feet as she halted halfway to the table. All of us perked up at that. Tamlin, brooding and snarly, demanded, "What is it?" She made a show of realizing the Highburn royals were present. Listening. I tried not to snort at the oh-so-nervous glance she threw their way, then to Tamlin. The next words were no surprise whatsoever. "Perhaps we should wait until after the meal, when you're alone." No doubt a power play, to remind them that she did in fact have sway here, with Tamlin. That Highburn too might want to remain on her good side, considering the information she bore. But I was cruel enough to say sweetly, "If we can trust our allies in Highburn to go to war with us, then we can trust them to use discretion. Go ahead, Ianthe." She didn't so much as look in my direction, but now caught between outright insult and politeness. Tamlin weighed our company against Ianthe's posture and said,
"Let's hear it."
Her white throat bobbed.
"There is... My acolytes discovered that the land around my temple is... dying."
Jurian rolled his eyes and went back to his bacon.
"Then tell the gardeners,"
Branna said, returning to her own food. Dagdon snickered into his cup of tea.
"It is not a matter of gardening," Ianthe straightened. "It is a blight upon the land. Grass, root, bud, all of it, shriveled up and sickly. It reeks of the Naga."
It was an effort not to glance at Lucian, to see if he also noticed the too eager gleam in her eye. Even Tamlin loosed a sigh, as if he saw it for what it was, an attempt to regain some ground, perhaps a scheme to poison the earth and then miraculously heal it.
"There are other spots in the woods where things have died and are not coming back,"
Ianthe went on, pressing a silver-adorned hand to her chest.
"I fear it's a warning that the Naga are gathering and plan to attack."
Oh, I'd gotten under her skin. I'd been wondering what she'd do after yesterday's solstice, after I'd robbed her of her moment and power. But this... clever. I hid my smirk down deep and said gently, "Ianthe, perhaps it is a case for the groundskeepers." She stiffened, at last facing me. "You think you're playing the game," I itched to tell her, "but you have no idea that every choice you made last night and this morning were only steps I nudged you toward." I jerked my chin toward the royals, then Lucian. "We're heading out this afternoon to survey the wall, but if the problem remains when we return in a few days, I'll help you look into it." Those silver-ringed fingers curled into loose fists at her sides. But like the true viper she was, Ianthe said to Tamlin,
"Will you be joining them, High Lord?"
She looked to me and Lucian, the assessment too lingering to be casual. A faint, low headache was already forming, made worse with every word out of her mouth. I'd been up too late and had gotten too little sleep, and I needed my strength for the days ahead. "He will not," I said, cutting off Tamlin before he could reply. He set down his utensils.
"I think I will."
"I don't need an escort." I let him unravel the layers of defensiveness in that statement. Jurian snorted.
"Starting to doubt our good intentions, High Lord?"
Tamlin snarled at him.
"Careful."
I placed a hand flat on the table. "I'll be fine with Lucian and the sentries." Lucian seemed inclined to sink into his seat and disappear forever. I surveyed Dagdon and Branna and smiled a bit. "I can defend myself if it comes to that," I said to Tamlin.
The Daimati smiled back at me. I hadn't felt another touch on my mental barriers, or the ones I'd been working to keep around as many people here as possible.
The constant use of my power was wearing on me, however. Being away from this place for 4 or 5 days would be a welcomed relief. Especially as Ianthe murmured to Tamlin,
"Perhaps you should go, my friend."
I waited. Waited for whatever nonsense was about to come out of that pouty mouth. "You never know when the Night Court will attempt to snatch her away." I had a blink to debate my reaction, to opt for leaning back in my chair, shoulders curling inward, hauling up those images of Claire, of Rhys, with those ash arrows through his wings, any sort of way to dredge my scent in fear.
"Have you news?"
I whispered. Branna and Dagdon looked very interested at that. The priestess opened her mouth, but Jurian cut her off, drawling,
"There's no news. Their borders are secure. Rhysand would be a fool to push his luck by coming here."
I stared at my plate, the portrait of bowed terror.
"A fool, yes," Ianthe countered. "But one with a vendetta
She faced Tamlin, the morning sun catching in the jewel atop her head. Perhaps if you return to him his family's wings, he might settle. For a heartbeat, silence rippled through me, followed by a wave of roaring that drowned out nearly every thought, every self-preserving instinct. I could barely hear over that bellowing in my blood, my bones. But the words, the offer. A cheap attempt at snaring me. I pretended not to hear, not to care, even as I waited and waited for Tamlin's reply. When Tamlin answered, his voice was low. I burned them a long time ago. I could have sworn there was something like remorse. Remorse and shame in his words. Ianthe only tisked. Too bad. He might have paid handsomely for them. My limbs ached with the effort of not leaping over the table to smash her head into the marble floor. But I said to Tamlin, soothing and gentle, I'll be fine out there. I touched his hand, brushing my thumb over the back of his palm, held his stare. Let's not start down this road again. As I pulled away, Tamlin merely fixed Lucian with a look, any trace of that guilt gone. His claws slid free, embedding in the scar-flecked wood of his chair's arm. Be careful. None of us pretended it was anything but a threat. It was a 2-day ride, but took us only a day to get there with winnowing, walking, winnowing. We could manage a few miles at a time, but Dagden was slower than I'd anticipated, given that he had to carry his sister in Durian. I didn't fault him for it. With each of us bearing another, the drain was considerable. Lucian and I both bore a sentry, minor lord sons who had been trained to be polite and watchful. Supplies, as a result, were limited, including tents. By the time we made it to the cleft in the wall, darkness was falling. The few supplies we'd hauled also had encumbered our winnowing through the world, and I let the sentries erect the tents for us, ever the lady keen to be waited on. Our dinner around the small fire was near silent, none of us bothering to speak, save for Jurian, who questioned the sentries endlessly about their training. The twins retreated to their own tent after they'd picked at the meat sandwiches we'd packed, frowning at them, as if they were full of maggots instead, and Jurian wandered off into the woods soon after, claiming he wanted a walk before he retired. I hauled myself into the canvas tent when the fire was dying out, the space barely big enough for Lucian and me to sleep shoulder to shoulder. His red hair gleamed in the faint firelight a moment later as he shoved through the flaps and swore. Maybe I should sleep out there. I rolled my eyes. Please. A wary, considering glance as he knelt and removed his books. You know Tamlin can be sensitive about things. He can also be a pain in my ass, I snapped, and slithered under the blankets. If you yield to him on every bit of paranoia and territorialism, you'll just make it worse. Lucian unbuttoned his jacket but remained mostly dressed as he slid into his sleeping roll. I think it's made worse because you two haven't, you haven't, right? I stiffened, tugging the blanket higher onto my shoulders. No. I don't want to be touched like that. Not for a while. His silence was heavy. Sad. I hated the lie, hated it for how filthy it felt to wield it. I'm sorry, he said. And I wondered what else he was apologizing for as I faced him in the darkness of our tent. Is there some way to get out of this deal with Highburn? My words were barely louder than the murmuring embers outside. I'm back, I'm safe. We could find some way around it. No. The King of Highburn crafted his bargain with Tamlin too cleverly, too clearly. Magic bound them. Magic will strike him if he does not allow Highburn into these lands. In what way?
Kill him?
Lucian's sigh ruffled my hair.
It will claim his own powers. Maybe kill him. Magic is all about balance. It's why he couldn't interfere with your bargain with Rhysand. Even the person who tries to sever the bargain faces consequences. If he'd kept you here, the magic that bound you to Rhys might have come to claim his life as a payment for yours. Or the life of someone else he cared about. It's old magic. Old and strange. It's why we avoid bargains unless it's necessary. Even the scholars at the Day Court don't know how it works. Believe me, I've asked.
For me? You asked them for me?
Yes. I went last winter to inquire about breaking your bargain with Rhys.
Why didn't you tell me?
We didn't want to give you false hope. And we didn't dare let Rhysand get wind of what we were doing in case he found a way to interfere, to stop it.
So Ianthe pushed Tamlin to Highburn instead.
He was frantic. The scholars at the Day Court worked too slowly. I begged him for more time, but you'd already been gone for months. He wanted to act, not wait. Despite that letter you sent. Because of that letter you sent. I finally told him to go ahead with it after that day in the forest.
I turned onto my back, staring at the sloped ceiling of the tent. How bad was it?
I asked quietly. You saw your room. He trashed it. The study, his bedroom, he killed the sentries who'd been on guard. After he got the last bit of information from them, he executed them in front of everyone in the manor.
My blood chilled.
You didn't stop him. I tried. I begged him for mercy. He didn't listen. He couldn't listen.
The sentries didn't try to stop him either?
They didn't dare. Feyre, he's a high lord. He's a different breed.
I wondered if he'd say the same thing if he knew what I was.
We were backed into a corner with no options, none. It was either go to war with the Night Court and Highburn, or ally with Highburn. Let them try to stir up trouble, and then use that alliance to our own advantage further down the road.
What do you mean? I breathed. But Lucian realized what he'd said and hedged.
We have enemies in every court. Having Highburn's alliance will make them think twice.
Liar. Trained, clever liar.
I loosed a heaving, sleepy breath.
Even if they're now our allies,
I mumbled.
I still hate them.
A snort. Me too. Get up.
Blinding sunlight cut into the tent, and I hissed. The order was drowned out by Lucian's snarl as he sat up.
Out, he ordered Jurian, who looked us over once, sneered, and stalked away.
I'd rolled onto Lucian's bedroll at some point. Any schemes indeed second to my most pressing demand, warmth. But I had no doubt Jurian would tuck away the information to throw in Tamlin's face when we returned. We'd shared a tent, and had been very cozy upon awakening. I washed in the nearby stream, my body stiff and aching from a night on the ground, with or without the help of a bedroll. Branna was prowling for the stream by the time I'd finished. The princess gave me a cold, thin smile.
I'd pick Baron's son, too.
I stared at the princess beneath lowered brows. She shrugged, her smile growing.
Autumn court males have fire in their blood. And they fuck like it, too.
I suppose you know from experience? A chuckle.
Why do you think I had so much fun in the war?
I didn't bother to hide my disgust. Lucian caught me cringing at him when her words replayed for the 10th time an hour later, while we hiked the half mile toward the crack in the wall.
What?
He demanded.
I shook my head, trying not to imagine Elaine subject to that,